now time for Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmental responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Top Hat Entertainment, helping you with all your party needs from DJs to inflatables. They have it all. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining the right mortgage can be. And Mamonto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location, 879-1000. This is Sports Saturday, living the dream and taking you with us on 101.3 The Game.
Oh, he's not lying. He's not lying. We are living the dream and we are taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I'm your host, Jeff Paul, the big fella. Austin Danforth, fresh off the airplane, fresh off a golf course in Florida, sitting to my right. Good to see you, my man.
Good to see you. Good to be back.
And let me just say this. I neglect to say award-winning sports reporter, sports writer.
You say it like it's contractually obligated. I'm not going to stop you.
I'm just saying I'm impressed with it. Just the fact that you have that, you know, that I've always said that you and Alex have more knowledge of this Vermont sports scene than anybody I've ever met. And I've tried to stump you guys many times on the show when you were guests with Bernie and I. You know, Bernie and I would always say, okay, how can we get him today? We're going to bring something up. But I could ask you a question about a JV field hockey team in Bennington, Vermont, and you would know, you know, the sixth best player on the team. That's what I've always been very impressed about with you guys.
I appreciate that. I would say that sort of knowledge is specific to in season. Now that we're trending towards spring, I might not be that up to speed on the JV field hockey scene, but your kudos are welcome and appreciated.
Well, and just so I just want to make sure I pat you guys on the back. You do a tremendous job for the Burlington Free Press, and truly, you and Alex truly are the eyes and ears for fans for the local country here. I mean, that's just reality. I mean, when UVM is making their run, the people that I followed on Twitter were you and Alex. I mean, when you're trying to figure out what's going on in the high school sports scene, when you're trying to anything that has to do with Vermont in this state, if they follow you two, I mean, you really are the head and shoulders above everybody else. And here you are sitting to my right today.
And it's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to be here.
Aaron Wells, well done on the Sports Center, man, or the Sports Update, but I have to correct you. The Virginia Cavaliers, the number one seeded Virginia Cavaliers in Auburn, they tip off tonight at 6:09. Coverage starts at 4:30 on 960 The Zone. I just wanted to make sure we had the times right on that, kiddo.
Yeah, I got them mixed up somehow.
No big deal. No big deal. But when it comes to Virginia, I'm just going to straighten you out. Okay, I'm just going to put that out there right now.
Fair enough.
That's expected.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. 802-655-6672. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line at the exact same number, 655-6672. What a show we have today, Austin. A lot to talk about. Baseball season is now about a week and a half old. Mm-hmm. The Red Sox have come out of the gate struggling, as have the New York Yankees. But the New York Mets are playing some good baseball. But baseball's off and running and, you know, pretty good stuff that it's back.
Yeah, and I think anytime you have two of the power teams not doing what's expected, all of a sudden everything's a little shaky, everything's a little more interesting, everybody's watching a little more closely.
And we're going to talk to a Red Sox beat writer for The Athletic, Jen McCaffrey, at 10:20. She's been with the Red Sox since spring training, and obviously this very difficult West Road trip that they've had coming out of spring training. And let's face it, I mean, you talk about a terrible thing to have to do coming off a World Series championship and a long spring training, is they have to go out west, play, you know, three really good baseball teams. Mm-hmm. And they struggled so far, but we'll get the inside info on that with Jen. As we talked about a second ago, the Final Four starts tonight. We've got Virginia and Auburn in the first game, and Michigan State and Texas Tech in the second one. We talked to Sporting News College Hoops insider Jacob Janauer about that coming at 10:40. I mean, listen, I know that there's people out there that are saying there's not enough star power in this NCAA tournament, and I think it all kind of revolves around the fact that Zion Williamson and his legend is not going to be in this tournament after getting knocked out by Michigan State. But two really intriguing games tonight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at it, I was reading up the other day, what each team likes to do well can negate the other team if they can do it. But what the other team does well is usually set up to negate those exact things.
Right, right.
So you look at the Texas Tech-Michigan State game. Cassius Winston, phenomenal player for Michigan State. He runs the show. He makes them tick. if there's a weakness for Texas Tech, it's a guy like him, a point guard that makes a team go, that's really dynamic. But Texas Tech doesn't usually let that happen.
Exactly. And again, in the storylines, I think for all four of these teams are very, very special. We'll get the inside scoop on that with Jake Janauer at 10:40. And then a really special one, we've had him on before at 11:20. Listen, I mean, I'm not hiding the fact that I'm a Virginia Cavalier basketball fan.
I've been one
forever, and I'm on my soapbox today for them. But Jerry Radcliffe's going to join us. He joined us a few weeks ago. He's a beat writer for Virginia. He's been following ACC basketball forever. He's the host of the Jerry Radcliffe Show on ESPN Charlottesville. He's going to join us live from Minneapolis at 11:20 to talk about this run for Tony Bennett and his Virginia Cavaliers. I mean, listen, I get it. I mean, if you don't follow college basketball closely, you may be thinking, what is this guy talking about? You're in Burlington, Vermont. Why are you talking about Virginia? Look at Virginia's story. It's a pretty compelling story. Mm-hmm. They're the first number one seed to ever lose to a 16 seed. There's a connection there, as the 16 seed happened to be UMBC, who also knocked off Vermont about a week before. So they basically ripped my heart out twice last year. No big deal. You know, but for a team like Virginia and Tony Bennett that takes so much criticism for the style of play that they have, for the system that he runs and the way that he coaches his kids, a team that's had... He's been National Coach of the Year three times in the last 10 years.
That's wild.
Okay, his record in the regular season is, I don't have it in front of me, but it is absolutely insane what his record is right now. I think he has the best winning percentage out of anybody in the country in the last 3 or 4 years. This year, a season where there was not, I think they were expected to be good, and a team that they obviously have a lot of talent. You're looking at a team that was playing in a conference in the ACC with Duke and North Carolina, two loaded programs, a loaded program in Florida State. So I think those were the three teams that people thought were going to run the ACC. Virginia ends up getting a share of the championship, a share of the title, but actually won it because they won their head-to-head with North Carolina, mm-hmm. winning the ACC again. You know, have got themselves finally to a Final Four after an epic game against Purdue. It's just a good story, and Jerry will he's the front line of this. It'll be interesting to see, you know, just being with Tony Bennett, the way he coaches his program, the type of person he is, and how he and his players kind of ingested that loss to UMBC and have been able to use that as fuel to get them to where they are today.
Yeah, because that, I mean, it's never happened before.
Never.
You don't know how anybody's going to react to that.
Sure.
And that's the sort of thing that could just, you know, crumble the foundation beneath their feet. Like, just it could get in their heads. It could have wrecked a team full of, you know, quality players and obviously a fantastic coach.
Yeah,
there's no page in a coaching playbook for how do you deal with when you're a favored one seed losing to a 16.
Exactly.
He's writing it as we speak, and damn if he isn't doing a good job.
And amazing what he's done there. I mean, you know, and again. I follow them closely. I think I'm a Virginia basketball expert. I think I know a lot about them. I can tell you that he doesn't get five-star athletes. He probably could. He doesn't recruit one-and-done athletes. He never has. He looks for the 3- and 4-star players. There's a great story out about how his point guard, Ty Jerome, ended up at Virginia. An afterthought type of athlete, was at a couple of showcases looking at other athletes, and he kind of caught his eye. You know, what he's seen in some of these kids, you know, Mamadi Diakite, who had the unbelievable shot, and the kid that's mm-hmm. really kind of put Virginia on his back. His development and Tony's development with him over the last couple of years has really helped this program. But you look at the athletes that he brings into Virginia to play at this level and how he sells his program, it's pretty special. A lot like how Chris Beard is doing it at Texas Tech.
Yeah. And what they're doing. Also a great story.
Another phenomenal story. And I was listening, actually driving in this morning, I was listening to a show on ESPNU on Sirius, and they were talking about a coach that he's an athletic director now at some school in Wichita, but he was a coach at North Texas when Chris Beard was an assistant there, and just talked about Chris Beard's story, how he's developed his life, and how he's gotten himself in this position, the type of person he is. There's a lot of really cool storylines, and Jerry will give us obviously some input at 11:20 on what's going on with the Cavaliers and with these Final Four games coming up tonight. It's going to be pretty exciting, but I do want to start off a little bit of baseball. Obviously, the Red Sox are starting out 2-7. It is not been a nice start. You know, I would say, are you panicked yet? Do you get nervous? And I would have to say, you can't get nervous yet. I mean, you know, every team in baseball goes through a period where they're 2-7. They're, you know, they lose 6 or 7 games in a row throughout a season. It's a situation that you don't want to see. And whenever it happens, whether it's the first week in April or it's in the middle of July, you know, it always looks worse than it really is. But I think for a team like the Red Sox that have all this expectation, defending world champions, I think there's got to be some concern, especially with some of the injury issues that we've seen with the Red Sox so far mm-hmm. this season. And I think Chris Sale's got, and not that he's hurt yet. No one's saying that Chris Sale's hurt, but there's got to be some concern there.
Yeah, I would say, you know, going into a season, you can have a slump. It is kind of a deep slump. I mean, some of these pitching stat lines are ugly. But the real concern is Chris Sale. The fact that it's not a control issue or just that he's getting hit on regardless. It's that his velocity is way down, and coming off of an injury season, you wonder if he just got a big extension and he's going to end up sitting out a lot of this year with another injury.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some questions with the Red Sox, and I think going into it, I think the biggest question mark wasn't the starting rotation, Austin. I think a lot of it had to do with the bullpen.
Right.
We know this team's going to score runs, but this starting rotation has not looked very good for at least the first couple times through the rotation, I would say. You got to believe, I've always said, you look at the back of their baseball cards, that's usually the telling sign. But when as Aaron brought up Chris Sale, which he did brilliantly, I mean, Chris Sale is a guy last year that, as the year went on, his velocity dipped. Mm-hmm. He's an elite pitcher. So he pitched his way through success during the playoffs and the World Series. Just signed the big extension, but his velocity is down. There's got to be some concern there.
Yeah, when you think, even last year, the Red Sox weren't a team that was built to have the bullpen do four and a half innings every night.
Right. Well, what bullpen is, really?
Very few.
Yeah.
If they're not getting the foundational pieces that they need, then it's going to be, it could be a long haul. It kind of feels like 2-7 right now could be a tipping point, because you really start to worry if 2-7 becomes 3-14.
Yeah.
Like if it just really sort of, it just snowballs on them and gets really ugly.
But well, and you got to believe that, look, they're on the West Coast. It may not be great the next couple of days, but they get to come back to Fenway Park. You kind of get comfortable. You kind of get yourself righted. And it's a long season. But I'm with you right now. I mean, I'm not a Red Sox fan, but I can see where there'd be some concern in Red Sox Nation.
Yeah. And it's also one of those things, like, do you start overreacting about the manager? No, you shouldn't. Because last year, Alex Cora was the... Right. The Wonder Boy getting the job done the way he did with that team. And you think most of the team is still reasonably young, emerging, developing talents, or a couple guys, starting in the early part of their prime. There's probably going to be some ups and downs. Last year, there weren't many. So it's weird.
Well, and then you look at the Yankee situation, a team that on paper looked like a team that was going to win 114 games when you looked at the roster on paper, but now they can't stay on the field. I mean, look at the injuries the Yankees have had to deal with this year so far. Didi Gregorius is out with a Tommy John surgery. Aaron Hicks is nowhere near touching the field again. Giancarlo Stanton's out now. You look at Dellin Betances is out. Their number one pitcher, Luis Severino, is still out. Troy Tulowitzki has a strain. Now he's out. Miguel Andujar, the guy who should have been American League Rookie of the Year last year, a guy that they basically said, look, we're going to play you because we're not going to bring in Machado because you now has a slightly torn labrum. They're hoping in a couple of weeks he can come back, but that looks like surgery. He's out. I mean, the Yankees...
That's half the lineup right there.
It really is. I mean, you take that type of that firepower off any kind of roster, and there's got to be concern. And I think if you're a Yankee fan like me, I think there is some concern. I mean, the thing that makes you feel a little bit better about the Yankees is that bullpen is so great, and Dellin Betances is close to coming back, and I think Severino's close to coming back. Giancarlo Stanton's probably a couple more weeks, but when you look at this lineup up and down, there's a lot of pressure on Judge now. There's a lot of pressure on Torres at second base. They're playing people that, Brett Gardner, the older guy that wasn't expected, just kind of got to be a leader in the lineup. There's a lot of pressure on these guys now to produce, and they've started the season out against really three of the worst teams, quote unquote, that are supposed to be three of the worst teams in baseball between Baltimore, Detroit, and now they're back against Baltimore again. And this team's at 3-4, and it doesn't look good right now for the Yankees.
No, you would have thought going into the year, Baltimore's going to be
115 loss team.
A handful of easy wins.
Yeah.
Like let's smooth our way into the season and, see where it goes. And unlike maybe the Red Sox schedule with the road games and, quality opponents out west. But, it's not ideal for the Northeast corridor here.
And I think the Yankee fan, any Yankee fan would be lying if they didn't say they looked at the Red Sox early season schedule and the Yankees and thought, boy, the Yankees could get 7, 8, 9 games in a row here, be 9-0, and the Red Sox could be 500. And all of a sudden you got a 4 or 5 game lead and you're feeling kind of good about things early in the season.
Right.
We all know what can happen. And the Red Sox last year started, what were they, 17-2 to start the season, built an 8.5 game lead on the Yankees. Everybody comes back to earth. Everything levels out. But I think when you look at the season and who you're playing, I think if you were a Yankee fan, you expected not a 3-4 start. And I think for a Red Sox fan, you're not expecting to be 2-7. But I think somewhere closer to 2-7 is maybe what you expected over the Yankees being, say, 3-4 against the teams that the Yankees have played. And two of those series were at home. I mean, yeah. They lost two series to Detroit and Baltimore at home.
Yeah.
It's insane to me. It's insane. But anyway, and the Mets hanging in. You got to give the Mets some credit. I know Mets fans get mad.
A week ago, I said, is there any hope for them? And it turns out there's a little.
There's a ton of hope for them. Look, when you have that kind of rotation the Mets have, you've got a shot. And the Mets bullpen is solid. I think, you know, obviously the lineup has got some pop. If Robinson Cano can be the guy that the Mets kind of need him to be, the young kids can continue to develop. And I think in that league, in that division, I think Washington has definitely come back to earth. I think Philadelphia, at least the way it looks right now, looks to be the team to beat. But listen, with those two guys at the top of the rotation, Syndergaard and DeGrom for the Mets, they can beat anybody in the game.
Yep.
Anybody in the game. All right, let's go to our Green City Garage poll question today. The Green City Garage, 802-651-9299. I'm my buddy Chris Wallace, owner over there. It's the only place I bring my car to get it fixed up. The question today is, in the NCAA tournament, what do you root for? Your bracket or your team? Go to @101.3 the game on Twitter to answer that question. And I bring that question up because my brother texted me this morning and he said he has a little dilemma. We're Virginia fans. And he's matched up in his bracket, and it's like he could win some cash. So it's like, what do you pick? So if you're a fan of a team, like let's say you're a fan of Texas Tech. And you get them playing Michigan State, and Michigan State's if Michigan State ends up going to the final, you win all the money, but your team is up against them. Who do you pick?
I think the calculus is going to be different for everybody, but it's got to be some combination of. I mean, if you're a diehard, you're a diehard, and money doesn't matter. Then obviously it's your team. If your team's had some success recently, and you could stand to make a pile of money. Me, I'd probably go for that pile of money.
Not me, man. I'm all in for my team. Go Virginia. I don't care what it is. I don't even care about my bracket. But normally when we talk about our boys at Green City Garage, our great sponsors at Green City Garage, I always give their address. But I didn't give their address today because the good people at good Green City Garage are giving away a free Vermont State inspection, a $55 value to the first person that texts us on the Town Fair Tire text line at 655-6672, the address of the Green City Garage. So text us right now at 101, wet text us right now at 655-6672 with the Green City Garage's address and win a Vermont State inspection, $55 value.
That's a good
for
deal.
Free. Damn. Text us right now. We'll be right back.
Sports Saturday is back on 101.3 The Game.
I have to say, with this run by Virginia, I haven't been locked in with baseball like I normally am. Normally, I've been paying attention. I'm always locked in with baseball. Right. But with my Virginia Cavaliers still doing this thing, I am trying to follow everything I can.
You've been waiting a long time for this final four.
My whole life.
Yeah.
They were there in 84, but I was like 8 years old. I don't really, it doesn't connect with me, but I would say starting somewhere around like 85-ish, 86 is when I started to really, when I kind of understood a little bit. And like my buddies tell me, they text me, I'd be like, who'd you pick in your bracket? I'm like, I was picked Virginia. I mean, I was picking Virginia. I picked Virginia when they're a 12 seed. I mean, that's just how I will never win an NCAA tournament bracket unless they, continue to be good. But now that they're good, other people pick them, so it doesn't matter if I pick them now or not.
Yeah,
but
now you're on the cool curve there.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's very rare that I'm on the cool curve. I just want to. All right, let's talk a little baseball here. Our good friend from the Athletic, Red Sox Insider, joining us now on Sports Saturday and the TikTok Leaders guest line. Jen McCaffrey joins us. Jen, are you? You must be exhausted with your road trips you've been on.
Yeah, guys, I was only on the Seattle part. The guy I work with, Chad Jennings, is in Oakland. Thankfully, I've been home for a couple days. But, yeah, Red Sox are looking awful, so here we go.
But let me just start with this. I mean, but your schedule in terms of spring training, I mean, you guys, I hope people understand and appreciate the type of time you guys have to put into this, especially this time of year.
Yeah, I guess it's part of the job. Spring training and was home for a couple days and flew out to Seattle for a week and home for a couple days and then the season opener. So it's a lot of back and forth and a lot of travel. But I guess it's, like I said, part of the job. So
Before we get into it, did you get to pick the Seattle trip or was it like Chad want the Oakland trip? How does that go?
We kind of laid out the season in terms of how we're splitting up the road trip. So I got Seattle and he got Chicago. We kind of split up the good cities, I guess, if you will.
Okay.
Now, Chad was a Yankee writer for a while, right? Now he's with the Red Sox?
He was, yeah, yep. He got hired. He was at the Boston Herald for a couple years after covering the Yankees, and then he got hired for the Athletic with me right around a year ago now. So.
Dream team over there. Dream team for the Athletic. All right, Jen, let's get into it. Look, I understand like early time of the year, but 2-7 does not look good in that rotation. There's concerns there, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this is not the way you wanted to start the season. If anything, you were looking at the bullpen as being the worrisome part, and the rotation is the thing that you're completely confused and worried about right now. I know we talked about the buildup all spring and the slow buildup, and some of this was to be expected, I think, but not to this magnitude. And I think they really need to figure something out. I know they're going to stick with the plan, as Cora said, but at the same time, you can't keep going like this and expect this, you know, different results. So,
is it possible also? And I'm not trying to give Red Sox an excuse, because you know that I don't like to do that. But I mean, you get out of spring training and you immediately have to go out west. I mean, does that play on the players at all? You think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there is. Their travel schedule is, you know, they went from spring training in Florida to Arizona for two exhibition games, then up to Seattle, then down to Oakland, then back to Arizona. And, you know, like you said, you're not making excuses for them or their level of play. But at the same time, that schedule just in itself is a weird, weird thing to look at. You know, no other team this season has started with that many games on the road. And that many games in a row without a day off, not even let alone being on the road, but it's just 11 straight without a day off, which is surprising that MLB would allow something like that, especially at kind of right out of the gate when guys are still building up. But this is, you know, this is what they were dealt, and, you know, they've had to deal with tough stuff in the past. So, you know, I guess if you're trying to give them one point of leeway, I guess you can look at it like that. But yeah, you got to see more out of them at this point.
Jen, did you catch any whiff or any hints of maybe this being in the cards when you're in Florida for spring training?
I didn't think that they would come out, you know, 17-2 like they did last year. I think you always kind of have to factor in the fatigue factor from winning a World Series. I think that's why it's so hard to repeat, is that these teams go so deep that it's you know, hard to start off strong, because you've lost that extra month of rest. And I know it kind of, you know, people will say, oh, well, they still had, you know, all the rest of the winter, but it really does kind of mess up a schedule in terms of rest and recuperation and restarting your throwing program and things like that. So that's why you haven't seen a team, one of the reasons why you haven't seen a team repeat since the Yankees did it in 98, 99, 2000. But I, at the same time, I didn't expect it to be this rough. I think, you know, I thought that they would start off a little slow, but I didn't think that they would be this kind of falling apart like this, you know, this quickly.
When you look at this team and the struggles they've had on the mound, what stands out? Like, what's the most concerning to you?
I think just the command, you know, the lack of command. I mean, you know, if you're still looking, you're still assuming these guys are building up, you know, pitch-wise and strength-wise and things like that. But regardless, they should be able to have command for, you know, at least 3-4 innings. In these first few innings, we've seen guys just, you know, just nothing there. You know, Sale, obviously, with the velocity. I know people have, you know, pointed to the 89 miles an hour, you know, that he was averaging the other night. I don't find that extremely concerning, because, you know, if there was something wrong with him and they weren't expecting him to throw 89 in that start, they wouldn't have left him out there. You know, that obviously, if it was something that they weren't expecting and something that they hadn't planned, they wouldn't have, you know, risked their $150 investment by keeping him out there just to try to get through it. That would be a red flag if they hadn't been expecting it. But that's not something I'm concerned about.
But I don't mean to interrupt you, but if that's the expectation of Chris Sale, 89 average, I mean, that's not a concern?
No, so it's not the expectation. I think it's part of the plan. Like, you know, he started off last year similarly slow and built up too fast, I think, is what we kind of learned because of the midseason injury. So, you know, you got a guy that's got injury issues in the past, and they signed him to this deal, and so they're trying to, like, work with him to make sure that longevity is part of the future. I think that, you know, If you assume that he's going to, you know, go out there and throw 97 the first start and he's going to be fine the rest of the way, I think that's naive, just because that's not how he's been. and you can't, you know, continue to expect that from somebody. But if you start them off slow and continue to build them up, then, and that's what you're expecting, and he can hit 97, 98 by you know, June, July, and continue through October, then that's what you want. But yeah, at this point, I'm fine with it. Even for the first couple months, if he can kind of, you know, pinpoint like he did, you know, that start was one of the better starts that we've seen, even though it was low velocity. He only gave up a run and, you know, a couple of hits. So if he can control his game and have his command and still, you know, continue to build up the velocity along the way, then that's fine with me. The other guys are the ones that are way more concerning.
Yeah, I mean, Sale's just one guy, and I think you hit the nail on the head there with the command, because you look at the first nine games. They've given up, you know, six or more runs in seven of those nine games, and that's not a winning formula, you know, regardless of, you know, I mean, even as good as their offense is. How have there been any bright spots you've noticed yet?
I mean, to be honest, not really.
Okay.
I think they're still figuring it out. You know, yeah, it doesn't look good, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You know, I guess the bright spot is that it's only a week into the season. So, you know, you got to figure if this is rock bottom, there's nowhere else to go but up. So, nothing really looks good, from the defense, dropped balls, to kind of, you know, the base running, you know, just some of the things they've done on the bases. Pretty much everything seems like it's been disjointed for some reason or another, because they didn't look like this in the spring. So
we're talking to the Athletics Red Sox insider Jen McCaffrey here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Okay, Jen, so I mean, I kind of wrote this off as every team goes through a period of the season where they don't win much. They look terrible for a week or week and a half, but you're kind of painting a picture here. I mean, is this something we're going to expect could last a while for this team?
I honestly think that they'll eventually, you know, turn a corner, you know, get a couple days off. They have a few days off that'll be much needed this week, you know, at the home opener. They have 2 days off, which will probably feel like a week considering, you know, how many games they've played in the past couple weeks. So I think that once, you know, they kind of rest and reset and kind of maybe get home and, you know, get the home crowd, you know, always seems to kind of rev them up and get back into a more familiar routine, I think that'll help them. Just at this point, I think if this is where we are, you know, in a month and a half, then I think there's concern. At this point, you know, it looks bad, but I, you know, there's still 145 games left or whatever it is. So, I mean, I think we have to kind of wait, you know, a month or so to evaluate the team and see where they're at, and see, you know, how some of the off days have helped them, and so on. See how some of these home stretches have helped them. If they're still playing like this at home, then, you know, something's got to change.
Do you expect to see Dustin Pedroia anytime soon?
He's supposed to be playing, let's see, he's off today, he's playing again tomorrow in Greenville, and then they were going to evaluate him after that game on Sunday and kind of determine if these games in Greenville and if this extended spring training was enough to build him up, and if he'll be able to, you know, be at the home opener during this homestand. So we'll know more about that on Sunday.
And Xander Bogaerts is about to sign a huge extension, correct?
Yeah. You know, that's the happened last week. So add that to Sale. And they kind of extended the window a little bit with this core. So, as long as they turn it around, it'll be a good signing.
Let me ask you this question, and this is just a more of a broad baseball question. We saw what happened to Harper and Machado this offseason. I think both of those players kind of expected to pick where they wanted to go, and I think they both ended up going where the interest was. I mean, I can't imagine that Manny Machado went into free agency thinking he was going to be the starting shortstop or third base for the San Diego Padres, and I can't imagine that Bryce Harper, when he thought he was going to hit free agency, was going to end up with Philadelphia. I just can't imagine that. Since then, we've noticed that a lot of star players have signed extensions with their team, and they did it in season. Are we starting to see a trend in baseball where, like, the big name players that may be looking for that big payday may just say, you know what, it's not worth it, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to sign an extension?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of guys have that mindset, wanting to take advantage of a familiar situation. If they can get the money that they think that they deserve where they are, then, you know, why not stay there? I mean, obviously, if they don't like that city, then they'll probably be hitting free agency. But, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of guys are looking at the market and seeing, you know, how unstable it is. And that's you know, a reason why we've seen a lot of these big deals happen so quickly and so many in succession.
Jen, you're the best. Thanks so much. Get some rest. We'll see you this week at Fenway Park. I appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. The Athletics' Jen McCaffrey, Red Sox beat writer. I love talking to Jen, but I wanted to ask her that because have you noticed? You saw the process with Machado and Harper, and I promise you, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, when they knew they were going to hit free agency, I promise you they saw New York, L.A., Boston, Chicago. And what happened? Manny Machado ended up in San Diego. Not saying it's a bad place to be.
It's a lovely place to be.
But that's not, for the baseball world, that's not where you expect him to sign. The same thing you can say for Harper. And all of a sudden, Trout signs an extension with Anaheim. Bogarts is going to sign an extension with Boston. Aaron Judge is looking at an extension with the Yankees. All of these players are staying in their hometowns, and they're taking these extensions without even trying to get into the free agent market. Because what happens is you get in the free agent market, no one signs you, and you end up not getting the dollar number you want.
Right.
Or go to the place you want.
So doesn't that happen in every line of work?
Sure.
You can take a money grab a place you don't want to be, or you can take a little less and be somewhere you might really want to be.
Yeah. The grass isn't always greener, baby.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you that. But it's an interesting dynamic because I think as a Yankee fan and a Red Sox fan, me being a Yankee, being a Red Sox fan, I think we lived our lives saying, oh, yeah, in 2 years when Trout's out, we're going to have Mike Trout, or in another year when this happens. And now all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute. Like, you better take care of yourself because these guys aren't. I mean, you learned something this offseason.
What was the number Trout got?
Was it like four? Oh,
it was a lot. Four something, right?
It was a lot. But I can't imagine him not wanting, say 10 years ago, not wanting to test the free agent market to see what could happen.
Yeah.
Now it's like, boy, if we take that risk, we're in trouble.
I think it's been huge to see just how effective it can be to develop young talent and to work on your farm system instead of paying big for free agents. Because now every team's trying to keep their young talent instead of spending big on someone that's already a star.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think with what Houston did with the Astros, I think is a perfect example of what people are trying to do and what the Yankees are doing, actually.
What the Red Sox have done.
There's a lot of organizations. Yeah. But are you willing to be not relevant for a while to do that? That's the question you have to ask if you're an owner now. Anyway, take a quick break. When we come back, listen, baseball started. We got a long way to go. But it's college. Listen, it's Final Four day, man. The biggest day of the year. It's like Christmas for me. I can't wait. We're going to talk to Jake Janauer, Sporting News next, about March Madness.
Another day of sports talk in the Champlain Valley. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
All right, so just so you know, like, I'm just going to tell you, like, starting at 6:09 tonight, when that game tips up, I'm off the grid. I'm off it. Like, I told everybody at my restaurant, I'm like, don't call me, don't text me.
The place is on fire. Don't.
What are we going to do? I'll deal with it when the game is over, because I'm off the grid.
The pizzas are going to be crispy if the place is on fire. Is, okay.
It's going to be what it's going to be, because I'm off the grid at 6:09. But what a weekend this is, man. I mean, you know, the tournament starts a couple weeks ago. There's 68 teams that are trying to win a national championship. We're down to four. I mean, does it really get... This is why I always fight with the college football purists that tell me that, you know, oh, you can't have eight teams in the playoff. You can't have 12 teams or whatever. I want 16 teams in the football playoff. I mean, there's nothing more... You would never get what we have this weekend in college football. It's impossible.
Right.
We would never have these four teams. Maybe Virginia was the last one seed, so maybe them, because they were one of the top seeds in the tournament. But you would never have Texas Tech or Auburn in the situation, because they wouldn't be allowed to be in the situation in college football.
Yeah, that's a different discussion for a different day. I'm an eight more than 16 guy when it comes to that. But yeah, it's the possibilities are what make March Madness so great.
I agree.
I mean,
anybody can win.
Yeah. Oh God.
Everybody's got a chance.
As we saw last year and then
exactly,
this year.
Exactly. So. All right, let's get right to this with our good friend, Sporting News College Hoops Insider, Jake Janauer, joins us right now on the TikTok through his guest line. Jake, man, what a great day, huh?
Absolutely. I'm excited.
So let's break down these games, get this thing going off field. Start with the first game, Auburn and Virginia. I think you're looking at two teams that are that kind of play two different styles. You've got the Bruce Pearl trying to cause chaos, taking all kinds of shots, running up and down the floor against Tony Bennett's very disciplined, defensive-oriented team.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of just going to be a battle of who gets to play their own basketball in a way. I think we'll be able to kind of tell in the first half, you know, how that kind of looks, and we'll kind of see if if it's able to change at all once the second half hits. But you know, it's going to be a matter, I think, of Auburn making its shots. And it's been they were inconsistent, you know, over the course of the season, but during the tournament they've been, you know, pretty reliable. But you know, you can't sleep on Virginia, of course, because of that defense and because, you know, they really do have shooters too with Guy and Jerome and Hunter. So, and like I said, I think it's just going to be a matter of who kind of like comes out and asserts, you know, their dominance in their own way, whether it's Auburn in playing quick and going down the court and taking shots, or Virginia and kind of slowing the pace and playing tight defense and kind of doing what they want out there. I think, you know, we'll be able to tell pretty early how this game might go.
Jake, it is a myth, though, that, you know, I mean, I understand the past seasons Virginia's been one of the lower efficient offenses in the country, but this year Virginia's one of the top five efficient offenses in the country. This is no joke of an offense. This isn't just a team that's focusing on defense all the time. They can put the ball in the net.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, Guy and Jerome and Hunter, like I said, you know, definitely help. And Diakite is kind of slowly starting to assert himself as a reliable guy down low for them, which definitely helps too. You know, that's a big a revelation in tournament time. And so they can score. I mean, even if Auburn does come out and starts putting up points like they have been and in their previous games, and then Virginia still, you know, might be able to kind of hold their own. You know, in the past, you know, they didn't necessarily have, you know, as capable of shooters and more reliant on their defense. But I think that's kind of part of why this team's in the Final Four, really, because they have those shooters that they can kind of go head to head in kind of, you know, score with you. And it's going to probably come down to Guy being the guy, no pun intended, that he was in the second half against Purdue when he started making shots and kind of broke out of his cold spell. I think that'll be very important for them, because if he's hitting threes and Virginia's playing its great signature defense, then that's a very good sign for them.
Of these two teams in tonight's first game, which one surprises you more that they're in the game?
I would say Auburn. Yeah, I thought Virginia definitely had, I didn't necessarily know they were going to be in the Final Four, but I thought they would definitely, you know, make some noise, especially after last year, because I think most people were in agreement that that was a fluke, especially with DeAndre Hunter out for the UMBC game last year and everything. I would say Auburn, you know, especially because, yeah, I think they're a good team. They had some momentum after winning the SEC tournament, but I don't know if you asked anyone before the tournament started if Auburn was going to beat, you know, Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky in three consecutive games. I think just about everyone would not have believed you, just because you know someone would have thought at least one of those teams would be able to beat Auburn. But they've kind of put it together. They had some bad losses during the season, but that almost, you know, seems like it's in the past, just because of how well they played. And, you know, in the tournament, sometimes it just comes down to momentum. You know, we've seen that with some UConn teams in the past, and Auburn seems to kind of have that in spades right now.
And Auburn is a team that almost, was it North Dakota State that the kid missed? He had three free throws to win the game, and he missed two out of three, and they would have been knocked out in the first round.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. That was like the closest they've come to losing, and since then Kentucky took him to OT, but that was, they kind of put them away in OT. So the first round really was the closest they've come to losing.
Before we get to the next game, I do want to ask, you know, I know Kiki was hurt against North Carolina, I would say Auburn's best basketball player. He was just the most versatile player on their team. How does that affect them going into this matchup?
Yeah, they do lose some shooting ability, a little bit of rebounding ability too. You know, I think they have to start Horace Spencer now, who's not as versatile. I think Kiki can shoot the three a little bit better. So that's kind of gonna, you know, hurt them a little bit. You know, they were still able to beat Kentucky and take care of North Carolina the rest of the game after he got injured. So it's tough to look at that injury and say that that's gonna hurt them a lot against Virginia. But at the same time, it kind of is gonna hurt them a lot, because that's a key player for them, and it's just tough to think of them in the same way after they lose a key player. You know, so I think you know they're going to miss his ability to shoot the ball and just kind of do a little bit of everything out there on the court.
All right, let's move to the second game, the game that tips off at 8:50, Texas Tech and Michigan State. I mean, two great stories. We've got Tom Izzo, who's been there, what, eight times? I think this is his seventh or eighth Final Four. And then you've got Texas Tech, first time in program history. Their coach, Coach Beard, has just done a fantastic job. Again, it's like two worlds colliding. You've got a defensive, physical team in Texas Tech against, you know, the juggernaut, I guess, that is Michigan State in their program.
Yeah, I think this one's just going to come down to if Texas Tech can score enough, because the advantage Michigan State has here is that they're a little bit more balanced. You know, in KenPom's efficiency rankings, they're top 10 in both offense and defense, whereas Texas Tech is number one in defense, but they're number 30 in offense. So they have had a little bit of trouble scoring the basketball at times. I think honestly, both teams can kind of hone in defensively on one player, Michigan State and Jarrett Culver, and in Texas Tech and Cassius Winston. I think Michigan State has a slight advantage just because they have better shooters otherwise, better offensive players that can kind of score if Winston does go cold. And we've kind of seen, even when Winston gets shut down, he almost just kind of comes up with these crazy acrobatic layups or helps set up his team offensively in other ways. Whereas it doesn't look as glaring of a problem. Whereas Texas Tech, if Culver's taken out of the game, you know, they have Moretti and Moody and guys like that can shoot, but guys who aren't as capable of proving their consistency in a way. So I think that's where Michigan State has the edge, unless Texas Tech can just completely take over defensively like they did against Michigan.
Of these two, Jacob, Whose stock are you buying more of when it comes to what they've done in the tournament so far?
I would say Michigan State. I mean, Texas Tech has been great, but at the same time, you know, Michigan State beat Duke, and I think, you know, before the tournament, almost everyone had Duke in their Final Four, just because Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, it almost seemed like because of how dominant they were when all three were healthy during the regular season, it just seemed like they weren't going to lose, you know, in the tournament. And the fact that they did, and, you know, Michigan State kind of took care of them, and they were able to be pretty resilient. I think Duke was up by 9 points at one point in that game, and Michigan State wasn't really intimidated by any means. I think, you know, kind of once you can beat Duke, you can almost beat anyone, even though Duke did almost lose his previous two games. They did kind of have that, you know, almost invincible stigma around them still.
But they did nothing in that game to put that game away. They were sloppy with the ball. They ran nothing. They looked really young. I mean, Texas Tech, let's face it here, you know, the number one efficient offense in the country is Gonzaga. They owned Gonzaga. I mean, if Texas Tech...
They
buried Michigan. This Texas Tech team is legit. And I'm telling you, everyone loves Michigan State, and I get why. They're balanced. They've got the great coaching, and Cassius Winston's spectacular. But a disciplined team beats Michigan State. And I think that's what Texas Tech is, Jake.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to, you know, discredit Texas Tech's run at all. You know, they've had some blowout wins, and then, of course, the Gonzaga game where they kind of took them down. I think it's almost just almost nobody expected Michigan State to be in the Final Four,
right,
because they would have to play Duke. And now it almost seems like they're potentially the favorites to win it all just because of one game. I mean, their run is both the runs have been impressive here, you know, without a doubt. I think Michigan State kind of has that Duke edge a little bit. But if Texas Tech comes out and wins, you know, I don't think really anyone would be surprised, especially if it comes down to that defense.
All right, Jake, who do you got winning tonight? Both games.
I, despite, you know, some of the upsets lately, I'm sticking with the favorites, Virginia and Michigan State. I think they'll be single-digit games, maybe not as good as the Elite Eight. Kind of tough to top that, but I think they'll both be pretty good games.
Jake Janauer, you're the best, man. We'll touch base again down the road, pal.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right. I'll tell you. We're going to talk about Duke a little bit, top of the hour. I want to get your, I have a couple ideas I want to talk to you about, but I'll tell you what, man, I mean, we become so lazy as fans, you know, in terms of what we watch and what we see, because we listen to all the noise. But Duke played a very undisciplined brand of basketball in this tournament.
Yeah.
They were very fortunate to get a win against UCF, against a very good basketball team. UCF's decision-making down the stretch beat them. Not Duke's decision-making. UCF's decision-making beat them down the stretch. And against Michigan State, Duke had a chance to put that game away. And some horrible turnovers. And I don't know what's going on with Coach K, and we're going to talk about that top of the hour. But what he had his team do late in that game makes me, for a guy that's at the level of Coach Krzyzewski, Mike Krzyzewski, and what we think of him, I was stunned that he would allow that to happen for his kid. I was stunned by it.
Yeah, I think Jake on his Twitter timeline had RT'd someone in the three losses Duke had with Zion. The RJ Barrett was 0-for-9 in the last 3 minutes of those games. The rest of the team was 0-for-4. And Zion only took one of those shots.
Yeah. And the reason for that isn't because those kids aren't clutch. It's because they don't run anything.
Yeah.
Ever since, and we're going to talk about this more, but ever since Coach Krzyzewski, Mike Krzyzewski, started coaching pros, his whole style of coaching has changed. It just has. And whether you like it or not, whether you're a Duke fan or not, they're not the same program that they were the years when Leitner was there. Every coach owned the Duke motion offense. Any up-and-coming coach read books on how Krzyzewski got his players to play. Now it's more NBA-oriented, and I don't think it helps his team.
Even had a roots here in Vermont with Mount Anthony coach Dave Fredrickson. He helped Coach K at his camps and just imported all of that to Bennington.
And his boots?
And his, I don't think Coach K wore the cowboy boots.
That Fredrickson was known for the boots.
Oh, yeah.
He's a legend. Legend. All right, take a quick break when we come back. It's out in left field time. Don't go anywhere.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, Aaron, what do we got this morning, buddy?
Two men are arrested after they took turns shooting at each other.
Oh, there you go.
Two Arkansas men have been arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault.
Suspicion?
Yeah, right.
After police say they shot each other while taking turns wearing a bulletproof vest. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette reports that 50-year-old Charles Ferris and 36-year-old Christopher Hicks were arrested Monday. A police affidavit said the two men are neighbors and were drinking on a deck Sunday when Ferris told Hicks to shoot him with a .22 caliber rifle.
Of course.
While Ferris wore the vest.
Can you imagine how that conversation started? Just two guys hanging out saying, hey man, I got a bulletproof vest.
Let's test it out. Someone's watched Super Troopers too many times. The bulletproof cup.
The shot left a red mark on Ferris's chest, and he was angry because it hurt.
Right.
Hicks then put the vest on, and Ferris unloaded the clip into his back, causing bruises but no serious injury. Court records don't list an attorney who could speak on behalf of either man.
I'm just going to leave that right there. I mean, listen, kids.
I'm only surprised it didn't happen in Florida.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, exactly.
That's just unbelievable. But again, that's why, you know, lock up your guns and don't drink with them.
They're very lucky it was such a small caliber weapon, too, because those vests are meant...
Of course.
They're meant to stop pistol rounds at medium to long ranges. They're not meant to stop rifle rounds up close. You could die that way.
It just, you know, it just tells really you it takes all types. There's all types in this world. You know what I mean? There's all types of people in this world.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm glad that everything worked out okay for them, and, you know, that they're able to tell the story and that we can kind of giggle about it, but it's no laughing matter.
No, I know a very, very sad story along similar lines. It's
terrible. Terrible stuff. But, hey, they got through it, and God bless them for that.
The thing I do find funny is that he was like, shoot me, and then the guy shot him, and it hurt, and he was like, hey, that hurt. That's the guy to shoot at you. Like, what did you expect?
Unbelievable. Well, but his friend was like, all right, you know what? I'll put it on now, and you can shoot me.
They just blasted him, like, a bunch of times.
Yeah, not good.
Our best and brightest down there is trying to split the atom.
Yeah. I'm sure they're... I wonder where they work. All right, time for sports update.
All right.
Now, back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Pretty pretty exciting news I got for us, too, by the way. We have a new sponsor.
Ooh.
Awesome. Very exciting day. Vermont Engine Service Incorporated. They've been in business since 1985. They're located at 16 Krupp Drive in Williston, 802-863-2326. Or you can go find them online at www.vermontengine.com or on Facebook. Their hours of operation are 7:30 to 5 Monday through Friday and Saturdays 8 to noon. They're an engine machine shop. They do engine rebuilding. Listen to all this thing these people do. Okay. And this is why I love places like this. My buddy Dean over there, I like this stuff because I have no clue. So I can bring it to people like Dean that I trust to do this stuff. But engine machine shop, engine rebuilding, boring and honing of cylinders, crankshaft grinding, head rebuilding, engine balancing, turn brake drums and rotors, flywheel resurfacing. They also deal with lawnmowers. They sell Dixie Chopper and Grasshopper zero-turn mowers. Incredible deals on holdover Dixie Choppers. They do small engine repair, DR Power Equipment service dealer, Briggs & Stratton, Kawasaki, Kohler, and MT. Service dealers. They work on all brands of mowers, gas-powered pressure washers, rototillers, etc. Pickup and delivery is available for small engine repair. See Dean at VermontEngineService.com. Welcome to the family, buddy. We're proud to have you on. What a first hour it was.
For the engine shop, I know I've needed some head rebuilding Saturday and Sunday mornings on occasion.
Might be a little bit different.
Yeah,
you know, just a little bit different on that. But if you need any of that work done, I'm actually heading over to see them this week because I've got some work needs to be done. But Vermont Engine Service, located at 16 Krupp Drive, go see Dean, and it's in Williston, 802-863-2326, and they're open today, 8 to noon. So we're excited to have them aboard. Good stuff. All right, don't forget our Twitter poll, our Green City Garage Twitter poll. The question today is, and you can go to 1013 The Game on Twitter to answer this question. The question is, in the NCAA tournament, what do you root for, your bracket or your team?
86% say that they would root for their team situation.
Of course. In the NCAA tournament, you're all about your team.
And I think a true fan would have sacrificed their bracket for their team.
Sure.
And in as much as they would have just picked their team in their bracket, and then all the stars are aligned, and, you know, Bob's your uncle, Jed's a millionaire, all that stuff.
Perfect, exactly. Well, my brother's going through this situation right now, but he's all in with the Cavaliers, so it's fine. Hey, I do want to talk a little bit more about this Duke, but before we get to it, I want to bring up, we were talking baseball with Jen McCaffrey, yeah. And I made the point saying that we're starting to see a trend in these superstar players that are a year or two out from being free agents that are now signing long-term deals or signing extensions. I don't know if I can ever remember thinking or hearing of this many superstars signing extensions with the team that they're on. I mean, usually you're using your free agency as leverage to get to whatever you're trying to get to, but these guys aren't even testing it now. And I brought up that I can't imagine that Machado, when he thought about going into free agency, thought he'd end up in San Diego.
Yeah.
And I still don't think that Bryce Harper looked at this as, you know, Philadelphia is where I'm going to want to end up being. I mean, I you know, in terms of the money, he got big money, so the money, the issue, and we got to Texas. I think it's unfair to paint Harper. Going to the Phillies is a money grab. He'd argue that they were one of the best destinations to win quickly. He might be right there, but I still have always said that baseball players like Bryce Harper, it's about legacy, and there is no better place to build your legacy than Boston, New York, L.A., Chicago. I mean, that's reality. There's been some great players in Philadelphia, and I'm not doubting and I'm not downing that or downing that place, but I can't imagine that when Bryce Harper thought, okay, in 2019, when I'm going to be a free agent, I'm going to be in the outfield in Philadelphia. I just didn't think, I promise you that wasn't in his head.
Yeah, those guys are all, like, historically, they've always gone to big markets because big markets can pay big bucks.
Right.
And if it's not a big market, it's a market that has no income tax.
Right.
So, I mean, you're looking at Florida, you're looking at Texas, like.
But don't you think, I get the money piece to it, but don't you think it's really for some of these guys? This is why I've always said about guys that have done the steroid piece, the A-Rods, the Bonds, those players like that. Like, they're going to get their money. They're going to get in Philadelphia. They're going to get in San Francisco, New York, Florida, Texas, Kansas City, wherever you want to go, you're going to get your money. But at the end of the day, it's your legacy. And that's why I was shocked that Robinson Cano ended up leaving the Yankees when he did.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you may not have gotten the numbers you wanted from Seattle, but let's be honest here. When Robinson Cano left New York and went to Seattle, made the money. Did anyone really think about Robinson Cano too much after he left New York?
No.
And even the first year he was there, I think his numbers were spectacular. He would have been an MVP candidate if he had the numbers he had in Seattle and New York, and nobody was talking about him.
Yeah, well, you forget he's on Seattle until a team that's more relevant plays Seattle. And it's true. Like, oh, wow, yeah, Bob Cano's here.
Right, Bob Cano.
Don't you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I just looked at it as, and now all of a sudden you're seeing Mike Trout. You're seeing the big names, you know, Sale. I think Sale was going to stay with Boston, but even Xander Bogaerts. You think that Xander Bogaerts would have said, you know what? I mean, I'd like to stay in Boston, but maybe I test it out to give myself some leverage. He's signing that contract. I think you're going to see Aaron Judge sign a contract pretty soon.
You get guys, with the legacy they're going for when they go for those free agent grabs is be the legacy of being a rich guy.
Yeah, like, maybe you're right.
Bryce Harper could have stuck around D.C., made plenty of money,
right,
and he'd have been that franchise's, like, tentpole, like, superstar forever.
But money aside, you're still going to test to go see. But I would think that these guys, you're going to get your money, but I think there's a handful of places that, and there's only a handful of athletes that can pick where they want to go. And I think when you thought of Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, don't you think in their minds, I'm going to go where I want to go? Instead, they're like, you know, everything's kind of a, okay, well, Philly's going to pay me. I'm going to go to Philly. Well, this isn't working, so I'm going to go to San Diego. You know what I'm saying? I just can't imagine two guys thought that that's where I'm going to go and I'm a free agent.
When you think of East Coast cities, but Philly is like fourth on the power rankings.
Right.
You got New York, you got Boston, you got D.C., just as far as like what people think of. And, right, you know, respect to Philly people.
Of course.
But like,
yeah, no, I don't want to listen.
Functionally.
And Philly's a great sports town. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not a Philly sports fan, but I've been there many times. It's a great town. I'm not saying it wouldn't be a great place and you can't be great there. And you can win there. They've got a good team. But I'm talking about the mentality of an elite athlete. When you go into free agency, your mindset is, I'm going to pick where I want to go. Teams are going to bid against each other, and I'm going to make that choice. I feel like these guys kind of said, I better go to Philadelphia, or I'm not going to play, or I better go to San Diego, or I'm not going to play, or I'm going to play for less somewhere else.
Yeah.
Well, big market teams with a huge legacy have that effect across all sports in terms of fame and your reputation. For example, in the NBA, it was the Lakers and the Celtics for the longest times. If you went there, it didn't matter if you were actually that good. If you were notable, you were going to be a name people knew. And I think the biggest teams in all of sports at that are the Red Sox and the Yankees. I think if you end up on the Yankees, people know who you are almost immediately in the sports world. And so I think for a lot of these guys, they're like, yeah, the money's great, but like Bryce Harper wants to be known. He wants people to hear about him. He wants to be on the cover of every magazine. Yeah,
have you seen this, like this bow he does?
No.
If you can, well, it's good you don't, because it make your eyes hurt.
I saw the bat flip the other day, which I love.
Yeah, the bat flip's fine, but he does this thing where he goes out to
the edge of the outfield and he does like a end of a Broadway show bow with his arms.
Okay.
It's so weak. It's so weak.
He wants to be seen, and I think he'd much rather be in the Bronx where he'd be on TV all the time, in the news,
front of magazines. I agree with you.
I can just say from my couple days in Florida this week, Philly did work out okay for Mike Schmidt. I saw his house behind one of the greens, two of the greens of this course I played.
Agreed. You can get rich anywhere. You can make your money anywhere. My point is, and I'm not trying to shame Philadelphia or the Phillies or any of that at all, because I think the Philadelphia Eagles are an organization that I think players want to go to because it's a great organization. I'm just saying, when you look at elite athletes, and I think right now the two names in baseball that were coming into free agency, Machado and Harper, were all we talked about. Okay, and that in their minds, when they were going to be free agents, I can't imagine that they in their process thought, you know, I just want to get the most money. I think it was, I'm going to get a big contract and I'm going to pick where I want to go.
Yeah.
The fact that Harper's in Philly and Machado's in San Diego says that the market has changed, and you're starting to see superstars that would have the same mentality, the Trouts, the Bogaerts, you know, even though Betts is pushing the Red Sox a little bit, I think you're going to see most of those guys stay home now and just take what they and try to negotiate with their organization, because there's no guarantee now when you hit free agency.
Well, what's going on with Betts tends to happen in arbitration anyway. Like, these guys want to show their value. They want to prove that they're worth this much. And then the team pushes back, and that usually causes a little bit of a rift. It's one of the ugliest times in contracts across sports is arbitration in baseball.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join us today. 802-655-6672. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line at the same number, 655-6672. And don't forget to go to our Green City Garage poll question on 101.3 The Game on Twitter about, what do you pick? NCAA tournament, your bracket or your team? I say your team, but whatever. All right, we talked a little bit about Duke basketball. What's going on with this basketball team? Zion Williamson. Let's just say first, number one, a lot of the talking heads out there, and I am a firm believer that the people that do this stuff nationally, that get paid a lot of money, you see their face a lot, do the least amount of research on what they talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked last week about Stephen A. Smith's comments about Virginia.
Yep.
You know, Tony Kornheiser had some ridiculous comments yesterday about the star power of these four teams that are in the Final Four. To me, as a college basketball fan, and I'm invested, I get it, but I love the four storylines here. I love what I see here. I love the fact that we have four teams that act. I mean, I think Auburn plays a little bit more up and down basketball. They're more chaotic than I would say Virginia, Texas Tech, and Michigan State does. Mm-hmm. But watching a lot of these games, I watch Duke play. I watch North Carolina play. I watch Kentucky play. The three teams that I think all the talkie heads wanted to see in this Final Four, none of those teams deserve to be there. None of them deserve to be there.
Yeah, they didn't win.
They didn't win. North Carolina got blown out by Auburn, not because Auburn shot the ball incredibly well, which they did. North Carolina could have cared less about playing defense.
They gave a ton of freebies going the other way.
Oh my God, it was insane. Watching Kentucky hand the game to Auburn, you know, the sloppiness of the game was horrible. Watching what Duke did down the stretch against Michigan State. I mean, these teams, I know that they're big names and I get all that, but they did not play good basketball. I mean, that Virginia Purdue game in the Elite Eight was one of the best games you're ever going to watch.
Yeah.
You know, man. What Texas Tech did to Gonzaga was, watching two efficient teams like that, Gonzaga, Texas Tech, that's what makes college basketball so great to me. But I only say this because I can premise this because I can match this with Coach Krzyzewski. I mean, you have a great story about Dave Fredrickson at Mount Anthony back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
If you don't know who we're talking about, one of the greatest basketball coaches in high school history in Vermont, Dave Fredrickson, head coach at Mount Anthony, won five straight championships down in Bennington.
Never been done.
Ever. And I had a front row seat for most of that. They were unbelievable teams. And he had a relationship with Krzyzewski.
Yeah. Back when Coach K was becoming Coach K.
Right. He was Coach Krzyzewski. Ever since Mike Krzyzewski's turned into Coach K, the superhero, I feel, since he started coaching NBA players, and you know, we got the U.S. team, and you know, and the way he's been recruiting, he is not the same guy that coached those teams back in the mid-80s. You know, the Johnny Dawkins, Danny Ferry.
Yeah.
The early days, the Leitner years, the Hurley years, the Grant Hill years. As they've developed and they've gotten better and better, he's been able to get these one and done athletes. And I got to tell you, if you watch Duke down the stretch in games that they lost, and you mentioned this on the air,
yeah,
you know, they were not a very efficient basketball team. I mean, if you watched it the other day, it was either give Zion the ball or RJ Barrett the ball and everybody get out of the way. They're not running anything for them. You have two players like that that can make that kind of difference, and you're not running an offense for them or running some type of something except for just one high ball screen to get them free. I mean, to me, I don't feel like he's doing. And I don't want to bash him because I think Coach Krzyzewski's a great man. I mean, I listen to his radio show all the time. I really like him. But he's changed as a coach. And yeah. I think that you can say the same thing about a lot of these guys that have had a lot of success. And when they get around pro players, it's more of a pro system. And sometimes that doesn't win in college basketball.
No, and I think you can look at, you know, the guy that sort of started the embracing the one and done kids, you know, the earliest, mm-hmm. Calipari.
Sure.
He hasn't won every championship.
And you can win with it. Like this myth that, you know, oh, see, you can't win with one. That's not true. You can win with anybody.
But it's not a guarantee.
Exactly. It's not a guarantee. But you gotta have some discipline in your offense if you're going
to
win.
And the thing with Calipari's teams, the ones that have gotten to the Final Four and or the championship game, they're the teams that, you know, they start poorly because it's five 18-year-olds playing together for the first time. But at least he coaches them into a unit that does good things. They, sure. You know, they play defense. They run some semblance of an offense.
Sure.
There's something there. They've become a championship caliber team.
Right.
You could say as good as Duke was, did they get better from day one? No.
But to paint a picture that, like, you know, and we talked to Jake Schnauer sporting that, you know, well, this Michigan State did beat Duke. Like, big deal. I mean, Duke did not play good in this tournament. I mean, they just didn't. I mean, they were not. Zion Williamson is an unbelievable. I don't know if I've ever seen a basketball player like Zion Williamson. And the other thing funny about him is, like, when they do things with him in slow motion, how high he jumps and how strong
he
is.
Like, his head is at the rim.
Yeah, I mean, he is just an absolutely spectacular player. And I think
a 280-pound guy to do that.
It's amazing. Wow. I mean, he is an amazing athlete. And again, it was fun to watch, and I get why you want to see him. But to me, at times, it was kind of sad to watch that last thing because it was like, he was kind of on an island by himself trying to make the, you know, and RJ Barrett, the same thing, throwing up these flailing shots that I can see somebody do in a recreation park. I mean, it's like, listen, I don't get any of that stuff. And I don't get why we're so pumped up on all that when if you really want to pay attention and you see, hey, look at what we, you're going to see. I think, and who knows, it's they're all kids, so you don't know what's going to happen. But the reality speaking, you're going to see, you see four teams tonight that have great stories, are incredibly well coached, and have a plan. And I think that's a, I think that's a good thing for basketball.
It shows that, you know, basketball is still something of what we thought it was.
Yeah.
It's not just a, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, you know, I just everyone wants to see that, you know, there's like four teams that people want. That's what college football is. College football is, it's Alabama, it's Clemson, it's Notre Dame, and who else?
You know, Ohio State,
you know, or Michigan. There's like five or six teams that anybody wants to see. That's what makes this tournament so special. And I get the football piece, like they play once a week, I get all that. But think about a tournament in college football. I know it can't be 60-something teams. What if I love 16. Figure it out. A 16-team tournament that the 16 seed has an opportunity to win a national championship. Like UCF for the last couple of years. Yeah, they're not going to beat Alabama or Clemson. I get that. I mean, on paper. But why not give them a shot? They never will have a shot because the system doesn't allow it. This tournament allows Auburn, Virginia, Texas Tech, and Michigan State to be playing for a national championship, and I think that's special. It gives an opportunity to a team like Buffalo to win a national championship. It gives Vermont a chance to win a national championship. That's what makes it so special. If college football could emulate that, you'd have a different world. I'm just telling you, in terms of college football, you'd have, I mean, it's fun to watch the power teams, the Alabamas, the Clemsons, but you know what? It gets tiring when a team loses two games in October or November and they're out. You know, a really good football team and they're out. It's too much.
The only team at the end of the season is Alabama. I'm at the front of the line for Alabama fatigue. I can't stand them. I just root for them to lose.
Right. Yep. I agree with you. Mark from South Hero says, business model, Final Four year after year, long-term money. For school, maybe better to make Final Four than a winner every 4 to 5 years. Yeah, you know, that may be right, but I'm not saying that you can't have one and dones. I'm with you, Mark. I mean, yeah. You want to bring in the best players you can to win. I totally agree with you. But I'm saying is you can do it like that, but at least have them run, like coach them. Like, you know, Krzyzewski's teams did not look like they were ready for those moments to me.
And the team that doesn't get better every week isn't going to be there at the end of the year.
I agree. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some UVA basketball. The number one seed, the only number one seed left, the Virginia Cavaliers, the only one seed to lose to a 16 seed, has a chance for total redemption. They're in the Final Four tonight. We talk to the great Jerry Ratcliffe when we come back.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Man, what a show so far. Got some Red Sox talk in there, some Final Four. We're just waiting to
Plenty of Final Four.
We're trying to get Jerry Ratcliffe on the line. He's in Minneapolis, and we're having a hard time connecting with him, but we're working on that as we speak.
It's all the mountains out there.
Yeah, all the mountains. I think it's warm there. I've talked to some people. I think it's like in the mid-60s or low 70s this week. I think it hasn't been. I think there were some nerves for people going up from the south that it was going to be kind of a cool time. But
poor them.
Yeah, really. I know. Poor. It's only 65 degrees.
It was like a very warm, I think, 41 this morning.
Well, last Saturday,
it was like 60 degrees.
When I went to bed at like 2 in the morning, it was like 65 degrees.
Yeah.
I went out back. I was like, oh my God, it's warm. Then the next day, you know, back to reality, it was snowing again. And last night when I went to bed, it was snowing.
It was like borderline puking snow last night.
Yeah, it was
night.
Terrible. I have shorts on today because I said enough is enough. I'm just putting them on.
There you go.
It's supposed to be 50 today, though, I heard, right?
I'll take it.
Are you superstitious at all when you watch your teams?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because I'm like, I'm over the top with it, but.
You switch positions until it starts going well, and when it goes well, you stay where that is.
Exactly. I mean, I'm with you 100%.
You don't hum or whistle or whatever to the opposing team's fight song.
Right, you never do that.
Only acknowledge your fight song.
Yep.
Last night, for example, watching the women's Final Four, I was rooting for specific outcomes in both games, entertainment purposes only. It wasn't going well in the final minute. I had to stand up. I had to walk over directly in front of the TV. Lo and behold, both games turned my way sort of miraculously, and I was a happy guy.
And how about both of those games last night? If you missed the women's Final Four, you missed a couple awesome games last night. Oregon and Baylor was epic. It was unbelievable. And obviously UConn blowing a 9-point lead with 6 minutes to play against the one seed Notre Dame was a tough one.
And they were up by a handful with like over a minute to go. It was... They and Oregon gave Baylor everything they could handle.
They did. All right, let's get to our guest now. Joining us now live on the TikTok Duo's guest line, live from Minneapolis, is our good friend, the host of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show on ESPN Charlottesville, ACC Basketball and Virginia Insider, Jerry Ratcliffe. Good morning, Jerry. Thanks for fitting us in today, buddy.
Oh, no problem, guys. Hope everything's going well back east.
Well, it's going well, but I got to tell you, from a guy like you that's been around that program for a long time, it's got to be pretty surreal to be looking at the Virginia Cavaliers in the Final Four.
It is. Although, you know, there were a lot of expectations on these guys coming in. I thought all along this team was Final Four worthy, sort of like the one from three seasons ago that lost to Syracuse. Both of those teams I thought were good enough to make it here. There's been some stranger moments in Virginia basketball history, like back in 84, when nobody thought that team would get to the NCAA tournament, let alone the Final Four. But, you know, with this one, it's been pretty cool watching these guys develop, because there's two or three guys contributing on the team that nobody thought would be as good as they are this year, like Mamadi Diakite and Kihei Clark, that put together that incredible play that sent the game into overtime the other night.
Jerry, talk a little bit about what they're facing in terms of just from when they landed in Minneapolis. I think it was they landed Wednesday or Thursday, to all the things that they have to do, and then they still have to prepare for the game. Like, is there a lot of distractions? I mean, is it really as bad as the media portrays it to be?
I think that, you know, there are distractions. I think if you're smart about it, you probably take care of as many of those as you can early in the week, about tickets and hotels and all that kind of stuff. I think probably the biggest distractions for these guys is there's a multitude of media events, constant interviews, things like that, and you know, I think some of the players probably embrace that and enjoy it. Some of them probably don't look too forward to it. And I know Tony Bennett, who is not a guy who likes the limelight for himself. I know it's kind of agony for him to go through interview after interview after interview. But, you know, I think if you keep it in perspective, it's not that big a distraction.
So the Purdue game there, in the play that, you know, kept the Virginia season alive. What's that experience like for you watching that? How do you process it? How do you weave that into, you know, what the content you produce from the game?
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting. There's a couple of times we thought this team was left for dead. Maybe not with what was at stake in the Purdue game, but like at Louisville last year, when they scored 5 points in 0.9 seconds to win the game.
Yep, that's right.
We're kind of used to seeing some unbelievable things, but we thought for sure they were goners against Purdue. I mean, not only was Carson Edwards having an incredible night, probably one of the two best performances I've ever seen in NCAA tournament in person, going back to Glenn Rice in 1989. But, you know, just the fact that, you know, Ty Jerome's on the line, he has to hit two and they're still a point behind, so 6 seconds essentially to go. And, you know, I noticed that Kyle Guy signaled Diakite that if Jerome missed, to tap the ball back outside, which he wisely did. And he tapped it way back, way deep into the backcourt. And this is where I think Kihei Clark was just, for a freshman, to have that kind of poise and forethought to run that ball down. And instead of, you know, Jim Nance said earlier this week when talking about that play, he said 99% of us would have taken a dribble and heaved that ball from half court, where he had like 1 in 500 chances for it to go in. But the pass he made to Diakite was just unbelievable. I mean, it was laser-like. And if he had, you know, he threw it to where Diakite could catch it and shoot it.
Yeah, you got to believe that if that ball was anywhere low or Dekeeta had to go down and get it, that I don't know if he would have gotten it off over the 7-footer that was right in front of him.
It was exactly. Got it off with exactly. Was it 0.02?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it was unbelievable that he could make a play like that as a freshman.
Jerry, you know, you cover this team and you've seen Tony Bennett throughout the years. One of the things that I took out of that game was at the end when he cut the net down, he let out a scream and like an emotion that I've never seen Tony Bennett let out. It just has to be kind of go through the emotion that he's gone through, being the first one seed to lose to a 16 seed, all the things he's had, the way he's handled it, number one, has been nothing but grace and class. But he's gotten his kids to buy into it as well. Talk about the emotion that you saw out of him after that great moment for his program.
Yeah, none of us expected that. And none of us had ever seen that kind of emotion from him before, ever. And I think it was unleashing all these pent-up emotions and frustrations over the year. Not only the UMBC thing, but for years, you know, the national critics said Virginia could never win in March. They always choked. That Tony Bennett ball would not is not the kind of you know, that slow paced tempo was not good for college basketball. That, you know, one criticism after another, and I think at that moment all of that frustration just came out at one time. It was beautiful to see, because, you know, he's such a cool, collected guy that. It was nice to see some emotion from him. And then he went over and hugged his dad, Dick, yep. Who, of course, was the coach at Wisconsin and Washington State with Tony before Tony came to Virginia.
Yeah, there's a lot of – obviously, we're up in the Northeast here, and I'm not sure how many people follow Virginia as closely as, say, I do, the host of this show here, so I bring it up all the time. But if you're looking for a wonderful story, try to find some stories about Tony Bennett and his father, Dick. The relationship that they have is special. But we don't have a lot of time, so I do want to get to the game today, Jerry. They're playing Auburn, a hot basketball team, a team that plays really fast, wants to speed you up, and wants to turn the ball over. What's the key tonight for Virginia to get this thing done?
Virginia has to control the tempo, and they have to – chase those guys off the three-point line, or at least try to distract their shots a little bit, because you know, half of Auburn's field goal attempts are from beyond the arc, and so that's one of the vulnerabilities of the pack line defense. So we've seen that a couple of times this year, but I think that, and rebounding and just sticking to their principles, I think if they do that, they'll be okay.
There's a lot of criticism from Charles Barkley after the game, which I thought was unwarranted, on Tony not making an adjustment on Carson Edwards. I'm not sure there's what you can do to stop a guy from shooting 45-footers in your face a lot. I mean, I'm not sure what else
off
you can
balance,
do.
Off-balance, bank balance, things, yeah. On the wing. Yeah, geez.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, will there have to be a different type of style defensively if these kids from Auburn are shooting the ball well?
Well, you know, I think Tony did make some adjustments. Right. He put DeAndre Hunter on him one time, and yep. He was still shooting over him. Yep. He has a 7'4" wingspan. But, yeah, I don't know. If you have two guys like Auburn's has, if they stay that hot, I'm not sure there's anything he can do. But right. I'm sure he'll try multiple people on him. But other than that, I don't think there's anything else he can do.
Who scares you on Auburn's team there?
I think Harper, he just, for some reason, I like the way he plays. I think he's a great shooter and really quick. I think, and you know, Brown too. I think both that combo is, I think that's, if Auburn wins, I think it'll be because of those two guys.
You've been with this team. You've been at the practice. We're at the open practice. A lot has been made about this, the game being played in a football stadium, so the dimensions are different. There's been people that have actually written articles that it could, you know, could be a difference maker. Virginia did shoot the ball. Their best shooting day of the year was against Syracuse in the Dome, where they had 18 threes. You've seen these kids shoot. Does it look like the depth perception is a problem for this Cavalier team?
You know, it doesn't seem to be. In both practices, they seem to be shooting well, no different than normal. They all said that they were comfortable there and pointed to the Syracuse game at the Carrier Dome and helping them kind of get used to that sort of thing. So they claim it's not a distraction, that they feel comfortable and that their shots are going in.
So, Jerry, before we let you go, what's this plan for the day for you? It's got to be a great day to be covering Virginia basketball.
Yeah, I'm going to finish up a story that I did looking back at the 84 team and drawing some comparisons. And a lot of those guys, I think, are going to be here tonight, and that's pretty cool. And other than that, I'm just going to go over to the arena and get settled in and wait for the big one.
Jerry, thanks so much for the time, buddy. We'll touch base again down the road. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Jerry Ratcliffe, the host of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show on ESPN Charlottesville, inside of Virginia basketball. He's been there for a long time.
He's seen some hoops.
He remembers back to the 84 team, which was a year after Ralph Sampson graduated and went to Houston in the draft. They went to the Final Four and got beat in that round. So this game would be, if Virginia could find a way to get by Auburn, it'd be the farthest Virginia's ever been as a program. So it's a big night. And obviously, look, I mean, I know that I'm a homer here when it comes to this stuff, but it's a big moment for a great program. And one of the best people, if you're looking for a guy to look up to, Tony Bennett's an easy guy to do that to.
Yeah.
Very easy guy.
Like Jerry said, the way he's handled this,
yeah,
and the way he's gone through this season, it water off his back sort of thing. And then until, you know, yep, we did it.
Yep. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, and if you're looking for some great storylines, I mean, he's got there's an article that just came out this morning. I read on Twitter about him. He's got this relationship he has with his sister, who was a big time basketball player till she got injured, how she kind of helped develop him as a player. Tony Bennett, who was, by the way, I think he still owns the number one for 3-point percentage in the history of college basketball when he played at Wisconsin, Green Bay. And obviously he was the backup for Muggsy Bogues for Charlotte. So a very good player in himself. And at the same time, you know, his father, Dick Bennett, led Wisconsin, you know, to a Final Four. The relationship that they have as a father son, it's just a special time. If you're following this team, if you're looking for a fun story or something for your kids to read, he's a good kid to follow. But hey, man, these games tonight are going to be unbelievable. Auburn, Virginia starts at 6:09, coverage on 960 The Zone at 4:30. And right after it, you got Texas Tech and Michigan State. I think two games that will I just think for this way this tournament's gone, I think that these four teams left, I think you're going to see some really special stuff.
Yeah, there's no flukes with any of these teams being there, and they are indicative of the way it's gone. Yeah, there's no smoke and mirrors here.
And you got two teams that have two different styles. You got Auburn that wants to run and turn you over, and Virginia wants to slow you down and be efficient. You got Texas Tech that wants to defend the crap out of you and be inefficient. You want Michigan State that wants to beat you up and down the floor. It's like contrasting worlds facing each other. I think it's going to be a great night today in college basketball. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Hot or Not time. Don't go anywhere.
I wouldn't bother with those winter coats because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's time for Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
You know, it's funny. I was just telling you, Austin, I'm talking to Jerry Ratcliffe. You know, he's been covering Virginia basketball for what, you know, like 30-something years, 40
since,
years.
Since dirt was new.
Exactly. So, you know, here I am, like, talking fast and so excited about, what are you going to do with your day today? And he's like, well, you know, I'm going to, you know, it's just the difference between being a fan and an idiot like me and a professional like you, Austin, and Jerry Ratcliffe.
Yeah, right, it's another day at the office.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good day, but it's a day.
You know, he was just like, yeah, I might go for a walk, have a cup of coffee, head over there eventually. I don't know. I'd be like, well, I'm running over there and I'm going to get myself a t-shirt, a hot dog, maybe get a beer. I'm going to sit down over here. I mean, I would be freaking out, taking pictures, selfies, doing all this stuff. He's just like, yeah, you know.
Me being me, I'd be looking for, like, where's a weird place I could go eat food right now? What's something they do here that I can't get back home? Like, I'm doing that.
You're doing that, yeah. Well, I just see the difference between a fan and a professional. You know what I'm saying? And I'm too much of a fan, I guess. All right, Hot or Not time, my man. What do we got today?
That's right. Hot or Not is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft's Corner Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes made from scratch daily. No box mix here. Make your day superb.
You know, yesterday I bought some cupcakes for one of my employees' birthday. I got some cupcakes over there, and they have the best. And I can't remember which one of them was called, but I think it had like fruity pebbles on top of
Ooh.
It. Like, that's what I'm telling you. Like, yeah. If you're looking for not just like the basics, which are fantastic, like they're you know, like the classic vanilla or the, you know, the chocolate or whatever that you always look for when you eat a cupcake. But if you're looking for some funky flavors, some just cool flavors, like, wow, where'd that come
just
from?
Some creativity.
Oh, Superb Cupcakes has got it. They got it in Wilson.
Rocket starters leaving the Knicks game early the other day is a terrible look for Houston.
Hot. It's a typical NBA garbage. And if you don't know what happened last, I think it was last night the Knicks played the Houston Rockets. You know, the Knicks are playing for Zion, so we got to get that, okay? You know, Houston beat the bag out of them. And the Houston starters were like the last 4 or 5 minutes of the game, just they didn't stay for the end of the game, just left.
Yeah, I'm really hot on that. And I'm like, It's as bad a look for the Knicks as it is for the Rockets. Like, the other team doesn't even have to stick around to beat you.
But the point, and I get all that, and I get that, and the Knicks are a young team that are trying to figure it out, and you know, look, and they probably, and again, I mean,
are they, though?
I think they are trying to figure it out, knowing that they got a lot of money to get to spend this offseason. They know they're going to have one of the top 2-3 picks. Hopefully they have the one pick so they can pick Zion Williamson to change their organization. But at the end of the day, as a professional athlete, it is your responsibility to be the, I think, and Charles Barkley always said, I'm not your role model. Yeah. But when you make that kind of money, and you're that kind of TV, and you're that kind of presence, I think you have some sort of, you know, of responsibility to kind of do the right thing. And the right thing would have been to stay out there and finish the game.
I think it cuts more like a sportsmanship thing. Like,
not exactly. That's the same point.
Like, if you lose a championship game, you watch the other team get their medals because, damn it, you both made it that
That's
far.
That's right. That's right.
It's a respect thing.
I totally agree.
It's not a role model thing. It's just like the respecting the guys you're playing.
Exactly.
And then another thing is, if you're one of the guys who's got subbed in, who doesn't play a lot of minutes, you're thinking, well, I sit at every other game and watch
That's
you
right.
play the whole game.
That's
Why
right.
can't you stop and watch me play?
That's
for
a
once?
Great point. That's right. The thing. Those guys that never get a chance to play, and I know they're pros, so it's not as big a deal to say it was in college or high school, but at the same time, you know, you stay out there and you support your team and your teammates, and I just, it's a bad look. But it's so typical of LeBron's NBA. And it's terrible. I keep blaming LeBron, but that's what it is. I mean, LeBron a few weeks ago sitting away from his teammates at the end of the bench because he didn't want to be involved. Like, come on.
Or does it go, I mean, does it like, what started chipping away at this? Was it Popovich and, you know, the Spurs pacing their aging stars by just, we don't need to play these games. They don't need to come. Like, it's just, like, that chips away at the fact that, like, it's an everyday job.
I I get that end of it. I see where you're coming from.
I support
different.
Popovich doing that. Like, that's, right. It's smart.
But that's different than this. This is leaving the bench.
I think it's all in the same sliding, slippery slope.
Yeah. Well, we're both agreeing on that.
Yes.
This one's courtesy of Charles Barkley. Speaking of Charles Barkley, Auburn will win the NCAA tournament.
Not. I'm just going to say not. Not.
No.
I mean, listen, this isn't because they're playing Virginia. Here's the deal about Auburn. I think Auburn's a great team, but they're missing their best player. I think, and again, the storyline for Auburn is fantastic. The fact that they've not, I mean, really tough game against North Dakota State to open this thing. They shouldn't even be in this position. If North Dakota State could make a free throw, they wouldn't be. But they've knocked off Kansas, North Carolina, Kentucky. You knocked off those three blue bloods. That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
They're playing with house money. They're scary. They're fast. They do a lot of things very well. But you're running up against a team in Virginia that doesn't get sped up. I mean, you're not talking about a Virginia team that doesn't play good teams. They play in the ACC. They play teams that speed them up. You know, they have a chance to win, sure. But do I think they're going to win? No.
No, I'm not on it either. My read on Auburn, you know, between Bruce Pearl being an emotional guy and what they've gone through losing Okike games ago, beating those teams, getting this far as a 5 seed after that first round scare, I think they're riding all this emotion, which could carry them
absolutely
even further.
Absolutely,
but you're going up against a Virginia team that doesn't scare, doesn't get fazed by anything. They're not built on emotion; like, they just do what they do.
Exactly.
So I don't think they're winning it.
Tom Brady is a better leader than Aaron Rodgers.
You want to go first?
Hot. I mean, come on. Is this really a question?
Yeah, I mean, come on, that's hot. I mean, you have to say hot there. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is, I mean, what he's become. If you just look at what's happened with his organization, I mean, I think the head coach is gone because of Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I just can't. And again, whether you agree with or not with the head coaching decision, I just feel like Aaron Rodgers has kind of developed into this. He's got this prima donna mentality where you look at Tom Brady, who's taking pay cuts so they can win championships.
Yeah, like the thing I think I saw the headline the other day, like Mike McCarthy is a dolt and Aaron Rodgers is petty or whatever. Like, whatever, it was some variation of that. Like,
yeah.
Maybe a stronger personality as a coach might have reined him in before it got out of control, or you know, led to the coach losing his job.
And now who wants to coach you? Seriously, I mean, you come into an organization, you want to be a young up and coming coach, and have to go coach Aaron Rodgers.
So you cow to one guy, and then you know the other 52 guys got to take a back
exactly.
seat.
I'm going to skip around here a little bit. The way the AAF went down will stifle NFL developmental leagues for the next decade.
Boy, that's a great question. I'm going to say not, because the NFL didn't put their name on this league. I mean, I think if the NFL put their name on something, and this was really an NFL minor league program, I think you'd see something. But I mean, I think that we have this mentality in football that, you know, it control, everybody wants football. We just hunger for football. We hunger for one thing. We hunger for the college game because it's, you know, it's an established entity, and the NFL is the NFL. Other than that, these leagues don't work.
And they don't have the financial stability that
right.
if it was an NFL actual B league would provide. Exactly. I think that isn't a logical next step. How much would the of their like insane profits would the NFL have to forgo to create a functioning feeder league?
And did you hear what Vince McMahon just put? He put a bunch like a few million, a big amount of money. I don't want to say it on the air, but I don't know. But a big amount of money in the XFL. I think that he's trying to kick that up again.
Yeah.
So I mean, but I think that's a hopeless cause unless you have a lot of money behind you, like you said. And if that NFL logo isn't on it, I think you're in trouble.
Well, I think Vince's goal is to actually compete with the NFL, which seems like a lost cause anyway.
Yeah, come on.
But then the AAF wanted to be a developmental league, and the NFLPA shut them out. They said, yeah. No, we're not giving you the rights to our young players. You're not going to be a developmental league. We're going to figure that stuff out ourselves. You can go away. And the AAF fell apart.
Yeah.
And so as an outside entity, people are just not going to go for that again. They're not going to try and become the next developmental league knowing the NFLPA is not going to be on board, even if you are successful at first like the AAF was.
And there were some names in the AAF. It wasn't like this was like the XFL that had, you know, you hate me. You know, I mean, it wasn't like that. I mean, there were some big names that were playing in that league. It's too bad it fell down like that, but it is what it is. We'll see what happens next.
My thing is, an NFL developmental league would have to come from, it would have to be organic within the NFL.
Yeah exactly.
Like, they're not going to absorb some outside entity that, you know.
Exactly. That's why there shouldn't be another entity. It should be, if the NFL wants to make this work, in which they should, instead of sending teams to you know, to play these games in London and all over the world, just, you know, have your football games be here and have a developmental league with your logo on it, and let's have some fun.
And Roger, get on it, because I'd be so in on that.
If they played football and you, like in this studio, you'd be all in on it. I mean, you're all in with the football. You're like biggest football fan I know.
I'd have the best seats in the house. The Red Sox starting rotation is in trouble at this point.
I'm going to say not. I'm going to start with not. I think it's too early to be panicking. I really do. I mean, I don't like the velocity situation with Sale, but I mean, I think when you look at these guys, you have to believe they're going to straighten it out. I mean, they are some of the more elite pitchers in baseball. You got to expect them to be better more than they're going to be bad. Like Jen McCaffrey said, our guest from The Athletic that came on, I mean, if it's like this in another month, you can be worried, but I think it's too early to get freaked out.
I'll say at this point, yes, they are in trouble, but they could get out of trouble very quickly. I'm hot on it right now.
A week from now, you could be talking about something else. That's what baseball is.
Yeah. So that's
The Yankees made a mistake not going after Manny Machado or Bryce Harper in the offseason.
That's just an overreaction. So not. No, I don't think so. I think when you look at the money those guys wanted in the years, it's a big mistake. The Yankees did that with A-Rod. They learned from it. I don't think that's. I think the Yankees right now are going through a situation a lot like the Red Sox are. Only the Yankees are doing it with a lot of injuries, and some of their younger stars that need to step up are kind of pressing a little bit. But no, signing those two guys wasn't going to make a difference.
No, that fills one of the four holes in the lineup currently that like you're dealing with because of injuries? No, it doesn't. No.
Exactly.
The final four needs Zion Williamson.
I'm going to say not, and I'm only going to say because I'm a college basketball purist, and I don't think it needed that. I think for the mass media and the ESPN world, that I mean, they're posting him playing pickup ball now. I mean, they're following him everywhere. I'm expecting there'll be a camera somewhere as he watches these games tonight.
I think that video was because he broke the rim.
He didn't break it. It just moved. But my point being is it doesn't need Zion Williamson. It'd be nice if Zion was in it. I think, I mean, obviously he's the best player in basketball. He's like the show. Everybody wants to see him play. But no, it doesn't need it. When you watch these games tonight, you're going to realize it doesn't need it.
March Madness runs itself. Like, it doesn't need him. Now, would college basketball be in an even better spot if he was there?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Sure. And your point's taken beautifully there. March Madness is March Madness for a reason. And that's what makes it so special. And that's why, you know, I can go right back to the college football end of things. Just think of what you could do college football-wise with some of the stories in college football that you don't have because there's only four teams allowed in. And that again is what makes this time of year so special. So yeah, it'd be fun to have him in it. It'd be cool to see him on the limelight like that in the Final Four. I know the country would love it. But when you watch these four teams play, I think you're going to see that college basketball is in good hands.
That's it.
That's it for Hot or Not. Another perfect job out of you with those questions, man. Good work. Good work. And don't forget, check out Superb Cupcakes. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we tie a bow on the show. 2 hours goes by awful fast. We'll be right back.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Green City Garage, located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington, Vermont, 05403, through phone number 802-651-9299. And the sponsor of our poll question today, which is, in the NCAA tournament, what do you root for? Your bracket or your team? What are the final results, Aaron?
80% say they would root for their team.
That's perfect. I love that. I love that mentality. It's not all about money. It doesn't have to be about money and all the money you have and getting to win all this money. It's about your team. Stand and buy your team. Being with your team. Being passionate for your team. Being fired up for your team. That's what it's about, Austin.
Money's fun, too.
Money is pretty good. We do like the money. Hey, listen, what a show, Aaron. Austin, great job as usual, man.
Thank you,
you really are a pro. I mean, you really are.
I'm just feeding off of you. I mean,
you better not be feeding off of me because I'm like all over the place.
No, okay, I'm a mess. I thrive on enthusiasm.
I want to thank Jen McCaffrey, Red Sox beat writer for The Athletic. Interesting insight on the Red Sox, but she's not painting a pretty picture, Austin.
No, it's tenterhooks right here.
She is not. You know, you expect, I mean, Jen is right front row. Like, she's like front line Red Sox. So you expect her to kind of come on and be like, yeah, relax. But, I mean, there's some concern right now in Red Sox Nation.
If this trend continues, yeah, it's big trouble.
They get their rings this week, though, right? Tuesday, they come home and get
their
rings.
Maybe they'll perk up for that.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what they look like. Those rings are just, I mean, those championship rings.
What's the Patriot Day game? Like
Yeah, that's coming up, right?
It's around the 20th-ish?
Yeah, I don't know. And that game will be like, the game starts like at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, marathon day, all that stuff.
Yeah, that's all coming up. That's when the Red Sox usually get pretty fired up, right? I want to thank Jake Janauer from Sporting News, College Hoops Insider. Four teams left, two big games tonight. Great insight, I thought, on all four teams.
Yeah, it's a contrasting styles, contrasting stories. You know, it's juicy.
Yeah, it really is. And I think when you look at both of these matchups, I think it's really intriguing. I think, like we said earlier, you've got Auburn, who's a tremendous story. Bruce Pearl, we didn't really get into Bruce Pearl, but Bruce Pearl's got some, you know, skeletons in the closet, if you know what I mean, in terms of. So I think there's a lot of people that are excited he's there because of his passion. He's a lot of fun to listen to and watch coach. But his past, you know, I'm sure the NCAA isn't thrilled that he's there. Then you got Tony Bennett, the Virginia Cavaliers, and the second game, Texas Tech and Michigan State. I mean, Tom Izzo. I mean, what can you say? Is this his eighth Final Four?
I looked it up. Yeah.
That is pretty amazing that the guy's been to eight Final Fours.
He for a long time until Beilein got Michigan good. Michigan's my team.
Yeah.
He was the scourge of Ann Arbor. It was just not fun to play them.
And obviously, I want to thank Jerry Ratcliffe, host of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show on ESPN Charlottesville. He's an ACC basketball and Virginia insider. He came to us live from Minneapolis. What a day it's going to be down there. For anyone that roots for Virginia, obviously a program that's been coming for about 10 years now. It's been a long time. 84 was the last final. Jerry gave some great insight on the Cavaliers.
Yeah, that was it was fun to listen to a guy that's seen that much. And, you know, that institutional knowledge, you know, doesn't come cheaply.
It doesn't. And you know what's funny? You know, you brought the question about like what he went through mentality-wise with the Purdue game and the emotions that went through.
He was thinking of Louisville.
Yeah, he was. And if you don't know the story back there, Virginia's had some great success in Louisville over the last couple years. First of all, I think they've lost one game in the last like 5 years there, but like 2 years ago, they were down 5 points with 0.9 seconds to play, and they end up winning that basketball game. That there was some resemblance of that being, it looked like the game was over a couple times.
I remember that,
You know, in a 5'8" kid, from, you know, freshman from California, Kihei Clark, that everybody's on in terms of shouldn't be on the floor. The Virginia fans are brutal to this kid all season because I follow this closely. The kid makes the pass of his life to another kid, Diakite, that's come out of nowhere, makes a shot, and now Virginia's playing for a chance to play for the national championship, and it was great to talk to Jerry about that. As usual, guys, thank you, Aaron. Great job again, as usual, and thanks for listening to us on Sports Saturday. We're here every Saturday from 10 to noon on 101.3 The Game, and don't forget to listen to The Huddle all week with Arnie, Rich, and Brady and the boys out during the week. That's another great show on this station. Keep it here all day long, starting tonight at 7:10. We got the Sox in Arizona. And tonight on our sister station, 960 The Zone, the coverage starts at the NCAA tournament at 4:30. And you can listen to the Yanks if you don't want to listen to Virginia. Coverage starts at 6:25 on WVMT. Hey, have a great weekend this weekend. You guys be safe. Is the weather supposed to get a little bit nicer?
I don't know.
Are we getting warmer anytime soon?
I looked ahead. I think like in a week, there's like snowflakes in the forecast. I'm not happy
about
it. I
mean, what's going to happen with, I mean, spring sports have started. I mean, I saw there were some lacrosse
soft
games
opening.
Playing.
It's like a week and a half soft.
At least
opening.
They're playing, though. I know that I have a girls lacrosse player for CV that works for me. She didn't think that they were going to get their first game in, but they played yesterday.
Yep.
So that's a good sign. Usually we got a long way to go, right?
Yeah. After next week, then it starts to get real.
Yeah, it gets, okay. Have we played any baseball games yet?
No.
All right, next week when we come on, we have to have a segment about spring sports in Vermont because there's a lot of good storylines coming up here, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So it gets busy for you coming up pretty soon, right?
Yes.
All right, guys, listen, have a great weekend. Enjoy it. Enjoy the games tonight. Remember to keep it here all weekend long. If you don't have a TV in front of you, all you need is 101.3 The Game or 101.3thegame.com, or you can always stream us on 101.3 The Game app. Hey, enjoy your weekend. Love your family. Love your friends. And wahoo wah, baby. Go Hoos.